We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, let's be more respectful to umpires.
Yeah.
Referees, because there's a massive shortage at all levels. And that means canceling games.
Right, it does. And there's not a shortage because people don't want to work. It's a shortage because they don't want to be abused by you.
Because it's not a fun job right now.
It's not.
It's not a rewarding job.
I mean, Johnson County's hiring. A guy told me 2 weeks ago, on the job training, you want to work tonight. You can come out here and work tonight. Now you got to fill out, a boatload of paperwork for Johnson County to fill it out. But they'll do on the job training. They need umpires and referees that bad right now. And they pay well, $35-40 an hour or something like that to go out there and umpire a Little League game. It's pretty good money, but nobody wants to deal with the abuse. No money is worth dealing with. And then what if some rogue firefighter parent like that guy is chases this kid down after the game in the parking lot or something like that? You just don't want to deal with this kind of crap.
Normally we chat with him on Mondays, but because of everything that went down, we're going to do a Tuesday as well with Vern. Josh Vern, you're a Royals insider, brought to you by Benjamin Franklin Plumbing. Call 816-363-4BEN for a spring plumbing inspection. Vern, good morning. The Royals making a move that I know a lot of people wanted, like find us a move. Seem to be the call. Find somebody to blame for what's going on. I don't know that should be counted on as the magic button.
No, and that's really at the root of what frustrated me with the move yesterday was it did seem like it was to appease that portion of the fan base that was crying to just do something, show us that you care. Maybe it's because I'm around the team. I already know that they care. I didn't need to see a sacrificial lamb like Terry Bradshaw, especially 32 games into a season. Now, but before I go any further, Alex Umwalt, Mike Tosar have improved this dugout. Salvador Perez, Jorge Soler, they always point back to Mike Tosar, and there are countless young bats in this organization that point to Alex Umwalt as far as their offensive resurgence. So the dugout improved with the addition of these two, and you likely can't add these two unless you subtract Terry Bradshaw, because you're basically stripping him of his title if you're bringing in new assistant hitting coaches without running it by him. So I understand bringing up Umwalt and having Tosar here for the next month plus, but these guys aren't new. J.J. Piccolo said yesterday, we've been talking about this for about 10 to 12 days, which means 20 games into the season, they said, all right, we got to make a change. No, you knew this before the season, could have made this move prior to opening day. That is one of many reasons why this looks like a scapegoat move, just a move to appease the fans. And I don't know, our fans, you guys have been talking to them all morning. I just can't imagine that this has pacified Royals fans because the reason why the offense has stunk this season isn't because of poor development from your young hitters. Bobby and MJ and Emmanuel Rivera are some of your best hitters. You know, the guys that have disappointed in runners in scoring position situations, which is what J.J. Piccolo pointed to yesterday, are guys like Andrew Benintendi and Carlos Santana and Salvador Perez and Whit Merrifield, guys that have well over 1,000 at-bats at the big league level, guys that are well past their prime. Everyone needs coaching, I can acknowledge that, but to act as if the hitting coach to act as if anything other than the veteran bats is the reason why this offense ranks near the bottom of the American League is silly. And then it doesn't even account for the fact that the pitching staff is one of the worst in Major League Baseball. Just the scapegoating of Terry Bradshaw, that's what really got under my skin yesterday.
You know, Vern, that's how it works in sports. We've seen it all the time. But what's, you know, you have, like, and I was in the camp of you just got to do something here. You got to freshen up the message because it is all the veterans. What's going to unlock Salvador Perez and Whit Merrifield and Carlos Santana shouldn't be playing? Wow. But, like, how do we get those guys unlocked if you don't kind of change the message maybe? And I'm asking because I have, like, no idea.
Sure,
no solution,
sure,
right?
Sure. And again, you know, this is likely a challenge for a hitting coach. Whit Merrifield and Salvador Perez. And look, you mentioned this earlier, and you're 100% right. These pitching coaches, hitting coaches, they're just making suggestions, right? That this isn't Little League or high school where they're telling you what to do and you better go out there and do that. That's not how it works, especially when the guy that you're instructing is making 20 times the amount of money as you are and is much more important to this franchise than you are. Whit Merrifield, by the way, has looked very good over the past week. Looks like classic Whit Merrifield. Last night was very clutch. Salvador Perez, anything but last night with a pair of big double plays. Salvi, to me, we talked about this last week, just looks like a guy that's gripping it way too tight, trying to hit five-run home runs and flip this team's record from seven games below 500 to seven above with one swing of the bat. Carlos Santana, I don't have an answer there. To me, Carlos Santana needs to be a platooned bat, a guy that we only see when a left-hander's on the mound. I brought it up yesterday to Mike Matheny, hoping, honestly, I was hoping that MJ Melendez would get everyday at-bats, or at worst, platoon with Carlos Santana in that DH position. But Mike Matheny did not seem too keen on either one of those changes with this team. In fact, was even pretty resistant to the idea of Hunter Dozier starting at first base over Carlos Santana, saying,
"Why?
We signed Carlos to be our first baseman," was the answer from Mike Matheny.
Well, he's not good. I mean, and that's another issue that I have. He's clearly a major hole in this lineup. And look, I understand the financial stuff, Vern. I get it. But that guy is not helping your team at all. And then that's got to be a big, like, ugh, every time you see him. I mean, we all played with that guy in Little League who sucked. Like you're not giving the rest of your team a fair shot when Carlos Santana's in the lineup.
I agree. I think he could be helpful against lefties. His numbers are good against left-handers, and with the loss of Edward Olivares, this team needs additional right-handed bats. Santana can still be an asset to this team, but if you're running him out there against righties, who he has an OPS below 500 against, went 0 for 4 again last night against right-handers, you're just going to continue to build the fire within Royals fans, and that leads them to direct their ire towards Carlos Santana, a 38-year-old who I don't think needs to be unlocked by a pitch or a hitting coach, rather.
My question to you yesterday via text was, okay, they fired the hitting coach. Now what? So what's next now? Because just firing the hitting coach
doesn't... Everybody needs to go on a tear. That's what he's having.
But it doesn't... That's not an elixir.
No.
That's what needs to happen, though. I mean, look... the coaching staff, to me, is near the bottom of the totem pole of blame, just slightly ahead of ownership. There's not too much on the bench that I disagree with. Now, my issue stems from this. If you're not going to play MJ Melendez every single day, if you're not going to give Vinny Pasquantino a look over Carlos Santana, well, then you better win, right? Because the lineups that Mike Matheny puts out there are not lineups meant to develop at the big league lineup or at the big league level. So, okay, if you're not developing here, you better be winning because you got to do one or the other. You got to win or you must develop here in Kansas City. And right now they're doing neither. So what's next? The next move? I don't think the next move comes until the offseason, unless we're talking about trading an Andrew Benintendi, listening to offers for Barlow, for Keller, and anyone else on this roster. Either the players fix this or, you know, we'll see if John Sherman tries to fix this in the offseason. But, you know, another firing of a coach, And yesterday, we talked about this, and I went on about how loyal Mike Matheny is and how I think he would lay on the sword before getting rid of a Cal Eldred or one of these close assistant coaches to him. And then hours later, Terry Bradshaw is canned. Now, Bradshaw and Matheny don't have the same type of history that Cal Eldred and Matheny, that John Mabry and Mike Matheny, that others in that dugout have with the manager of this team. So, no, I don't think a few weeks from now we're going to be firing another one of Mike Matheny's assistants. I think it's going to be a few weeks from now if the losing continues. You're trading away some guys that are hitting at the top of your lineup.
It wasn't glowing about the pitching either. Dayton Moore taking responsibility for rushing the pitchers. What did you make of his comments about rushing guys through the system?
You always like to hear people at the top take accountability and say that you can put it on my shoulders. So I appreciate that from Dayton. But I remember that 2020 season. The Royals had no other choice. Junis had COVID. Keller had COVID. Duffy was already there. He made the opening day start. You had no one else to turn to in game two. You had to go to Brady Singer. You had to go to Chris Bubich. And these guys had the mental stability to make that jump to the big leagues without ever pitching at Omaha. No, I don't blame Dayton for the Brady Singer and Chris Bubich and their tough 2022. I think it begins with the player. I always begin with the player and their willingness to absorb information and go out there and execute the game plan. But after you begin, you know, talking about the players and where they're falling short, then you turn your attention to the front office. But I don't know if the issue is with the scouting and the four pitchers that the Royals took in that 2018 draft to start that draft. Were they misscouted? Were they overdrafted? Should they have ever been selected in those positions? I think so. I think those names in the spots that they took them were fine selections. My issue stems from, and this is both offensively and on the mound, the amount of pressure that you put on these young arms coming into the season, right? J.J. Piccolo told me back in spring training, the success of this team in 2022 is going to be predicated on the improvement of our young starting pitching. Now it's being sunk early on by the veteran bats on this team, but this all goes back to 2021 and the conversations we had around the trade deadline. All throughout 2021, these young starting pitchers were looking up to the front office and saying, we're not capable of being the pillar of this team, the reason why you win night in and night out. We're not that type of rotation just yet. Meanwhile, the offense of Mondesi and Dozier and Merrifield and Benny and Taylor and Salvi and Santana, they were looking up to the front office saying, we're not the type of offense that can lead you to the postseason. So both the rotation and the offense was saying, we're not good enough. Either bring in a lot of help or focus your attention elsewhere and build up that aspect of the team. And yet, this front office said, no, offense, I know you've ranked near the bottom every single year for the past 4 or 5 years, but we believe in you. Now go out there and get them. Yes, young starting pitchers, you've shown anything but consistency, but you are going to be the linchpin of this team in 2022. So when your offense and your rotation, when you're trying to squeeze this square peg in a round hole, I can't be surprised that we're sitting here 9 games below .500. I remember going out with you guys right before spring training was wrapping up, talking about how nervous I was getting that, oh my God, they're really running this exact same team back that won 74 games last season. And here we are pacing for an even worse summer here in 22.
Well, I think, you know, the hitting coach aside, but I think they need somebody from outside the organization that maybe doesn't know what these guys are all about. Like, they just promoted the same people that have been given the same information. Like, at some point, don't you have to go outside the organization and maybe look for somebody that's different?
Well, the guys that they brought up are also a part of, you know, J.J. Piccolo's promotion up to the GM, the change within. I know it's the same names, but it's not the exact same. The organization isn't run the same way. the guys that were brought in and J.J. Piccolo was the general manager, that's John Sherman's Kansas City Royals. Maybe Terry Bradshaw, Dayton Moore is the general manager, that's David Glass's Kansas City Royals. So there has been change, and I do believe that Alex Umalt and Mike Tosar, for as long as they're here, they are bringing they're bringing more 2022 to these hitters meetings than what was happening before. So there are changes, even though, yes, they're names that have been in this organization for 7, 8, 9, 10 years.
Vern, thanks for a few minutes. Back at it at noon today. Doubleheader today here on 610 Sports Radio. That's Josh Vern, our Royals insider, brought to you by Ben Franklin Plumbing. Call 816-363-4BEN for a spring plumbing inspection. Vern has your on-deck show today coming up at noon. Royals White Sox for a day-night doubleheader. 1:10 first pitch and a 6:10 first pitch, both right here on 610 Sports Radio.
That's a twin bill.
That's right. A football coach holds the perfect job interview. Well, one we'd pass anyway. Next.
You're listening to the home of What We Learned with Billy Coons.
Legend Ball, he's an expert on the city of St. Louis, but he says the people are rude and hateful and they suck.
Fridays at 9:50 on Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, your home for car audio since 1967 on 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
So an interesting job interview if you're going to work for Dana Holgorsen, the head coach at Houston, who's formerly at West Virginia. I think we might be flying through this thing.
Most of us would, I would imagine.
There was a long piece written in The Athletic about how coaches find their other coaches.
Mm-hmm. How do you find assistants? It's always fascinating to me.
And some are pretty straightforward, what have you. Dana Holgorsen is not. He hired a guy by the name of Tony Gibson.
I know Tony.
He was the Pitt Panthers secondaries coach. And he flew him in for an interview. Okay. Went to Houston. Flew him down there on New Year's Eve, which is a strange time to do an interview too. But
because your wife is probably saying, get home. Come on. It's New Year's Eve.
Picked him up in a stretch limo.
Want to watch the ball drop.
Took him to Holgorsen's favorite barbecue joint, which was closed. Okay.
This is how you know you got pull.
Holgorsen picks up the phone, calls the owner. Owner comes and opens the place.
That's right.
Gibson details the interview. We played Golden Tee for about 6 hours and drank a bleep ton of beers. We never talked one down of football.
Hired.
I got back home and my wife said, how'd that go? I said, I have no idea. I got drunk with him.
How is the interview? No clue.
And he got the job. We should have known maybe Dana Holgorsen was also going to take the job at Houston and leave West Virginia because he was at West Virginia at the time he was going to Houston. He was in Houston doing interviews and going to his favorite Houston. He was always going to be in Houston, apparently, if there was a job that opened up, right? Mm-hmm. So he gave Gibson the job there. Their defensive numbers went up. It was a great success.
I think that's the
high percentage, quote, a high percentage of Dana's interviews have taken place at this barbecue restaurant, said one of Holgorsen's assistants. I guess if you know their football acumen, you want to find out if you can hang out with them and what makes them tick.
Yeah, if you can work with somebody, you know.
Can I work with you?
Look, you're coaching a Division I, right? Obviously, you're good at what you do. You didn't just, you know, happen to get there because you were a stumble bum, right? So you knew what you were doing. We know you're a good football coach. We know the X's and O's. I don't need to sit around and talk to you about that. I got to find out what makes you tick, and if it's somebody that I want to be around for 18 hours a day plus. How are you going to relate to recruits and agents and moms and uncles and dads and everybody in between? Can you be somebody we can quote unquote let out in the public? You know, are you going to be a good face for the university and whatnot and for the team? And so I think it's spectacular that Dana Holgorsen went through an entire job interview and goes through these job interviews and doesn't ask them about football whatsoever. Because at the end of the day, you know, football, you've gotten this far. I need to know what kind of person you truly are, what kind of dude you are, and if you're somebody that I truly want to be around and truly want to work with. And if our personalities don't match, then we're not going to have success on the field. I think it's a great way to do an interview. I do. Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? Sit around and go, what's your philosophy on the 3-4 versus the 4-3? Who the hell cares? And I'm zoning out by that time.
Play Golden Tee and have some beer.
Can we hang out together? Can we be friends? Can we tolerate each other? Because at the collegiate level especially, man, you're spending every freaking waking hour with these guys, right? And you want to make sure that if you got a guy in there, you don't have some heel walking around. You got somebody that everybody wants to be around and hang out with. And if you can hang out with people and you like each other, you know, away from the football aspect of things, I think it's probably going to translate in how you do your job too.
I'm bummed that the Chiefs lost out on Melvin Ingram for a couple of reasons, Bob. One, I think he had some gas in his tank. Two, it's still a position of need.
Mm-hmm.
And this doesn't make it any better. They lost him over $600,000.
I'm not surprised.
He's getting 1 year, $5 million to go to Miami. Granted, no income tax, so you get it's even more of a bump, right?
Mm-hmm.
he's getting all that money. But I also understand why the Chiefs then put that little tag on him. It was a $4.4 million offer. If they didn't get him, they'd get a pick back. He'd go out and shopped himself, got a little bit more money.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of disappointed it came down to $600,000, but also I'm hopeful that he just wanted to be in Miami. Like Miami was his choice and there was nothing you could do about it anyway. I would have felt a lot better though had it been like a 1 year, $8 million, 1 year, $10 million, 2 years, whatever,
mm-hmm.
rather than $600K, which in sports money is
5 cents, right?
It's $1,000. You know,
if that, I don't know what the conversion rate is from sports money to normal dollars. Somebody should come up with a conversion chart on that so we know. But it's very reminiscent of what happened a year ago at this time, right? Everybody wanted Melvin Ingram to come here. He took a little bit more money to go to Pittsburgh, ended up being unhappy. We got him back here in Kansas City. That's what Melvin Ingram is all about, which is why, you know, the Chiefs gave him that kind of tendered offer. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice. Well, you can't assume, right? And so, you know, you give Melvin Ingram the offer, but you put the caveat on the offer. So you have the opportunity to get something back in return for Melvin Ingram if he is going to jump ship. So I think the Chiefs in the back of their mind probably knew that this was going to be a situation in which Melvin Ingram was going to look around for the highest bidder, and they knew no matter who that was, he was going to take that offer. But they wanted to have some insurance, and they got the insurance. That's why they gave him that offer, because they knew he was probably going to be one of those guys that took an offer elsewhere.
And Brett Veach mentioned as well that part of the reason they did that was so they could keep in communication with him.
Right.
So it's like, we'll not let you stray too far. We just want you to circle back when you hear something. And that allowed us to kind of be able to do that. I just wish it was like a double the amount or something. So it was like blatantly clear. Because now I still think they need to find a veteran guy. And I don't think it's going to cost one for five.
Sure.
I think whoever you're going to get now is probably going to be lesser, I think, valued, and certainly lesser. You don't have a knowledge of him in your system. Like we saw Melvin Ingram liked it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're probably going to have to go get somebody, and it's going to cost him more. It's going to cost him more than one for five. That's a disappointing part too, that if he made an offer that went and you couldn't compete with it,
right,
that would be fine. But now you're still going to have to replace that person, and it's probably going to cost him more money, right? Jadeveon Clowney's probably going to not be one for five.
Maybe.
Justin Houston's probably not going to be one for five. That's the hard part.
Yeah.
Like, darn it.
But what are the offers for those guys, and what time of year is it?
Maybe. Maybe we get closer to camp, and the story changes. But I was hoping Miami's offer to Melvin Ingram blew it out of the water.
No. The Pittsburgh offer didn't blow it out of the water last year.
No, it didn't.
Melvin Ingram is on. Hey, look, man, he's on a money grab tour, and I can't blame him. He's at the tail end of his career. Give me as much as I can, as quickly as I can. Doesn't matter where. I just want to make some cash. Time to talk to Dayton Moore, the president of baseball operations for the Kansas City Royals. And Dayton, I'm sure yesterday was not a day that you saw coming when the season started. Can you just kind of talk about the mindset that led to making this decision yesterday with Terry Bradshaw?
Well, good morning, guys, and I appreciate being on with you. Yeah, I mean, it's that's never easy, as we all know. And, you know, Terry's a great friend, and he's done amazing things, you know, for this organization. He's a very steady person, very consistent person, very positive, optimistic, and somebody that I expect to hopefully continue to be a part of our organization in the future once things settle and you know, we just kind of, you know, get through this period. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Bob, you know, a few years ago, you know, we created this director of hitting performance department led by Alex Zumwalt. And, you know, the mindset of that, the way we had structured that department is Alec would oversee our hitting processes from the major league team all the way down to the Dominican Summer League. And then, of course, we know what happened with the pandemic and the tiers and the different tier levels, tier one, tier two, tier three employees. And, you know, Alec couldn't be around with the major league team on a day in and day out basis. And so we elected to keep Alec at the alternate site and work with, you know, the group of minor league players that we're all starting to see here at the major leagues, Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ Melendez and the Vinny Pascantinos of the world and Nick Prado and others that are on the horizon. And so, you know, and even this time last year, we were still under, you know, that type of constraint. And so really it's something we've talked a lot about. We wanted to get back to that structure. And, you know, Alec is going to, you know, perform those duties that we had actually felt that he was best suited for and the overall development and the progression of our hitters, you know, going forward. And so, and then obviously when the team offensively just continued to struggle and, you know, we felt that the timing was right because, you know, we wanted to make sure that we're moving forward. And so, you know. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, when you make a move like this, whether it's a pitching coach or hitting coach or whatnot, like from your standpoint, from the organization standpoint, like take me inside some of those meetings. You guys say, all right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to, you know, fire the hitting coach, fire the pitching coach. Then the next question becomes, okay, what's next? Like now, what's the expectation for the guys on the offensive side now that the hitting coach is fired? Is there an expectation they're going to turn it around? Like how do you guys like get to that next step, I guess?
Well, it's hard to describe. It really is because, I mean, ultimately you're relying on, you know, the hitters and the players to make the necessary adjustments. And sometimes a new voice, just kind of a, you know, kind of shaking the trees and a move like this gets people more aware. There's a better sense of urgency of what we need to do. But I think that what the main difference I think you'll see is a lot of the preparation and the game planning and the things that we do prior to each game, you know, with our hitters, the individual hitters, to prepare them to attack that night's starting pitcher. And that's so much of it. And we just felt then that it was time to move a little quicker in that direction just to make sure that our work and our preparation was more consistent. And we're bringing on more people in that department to get involved with our major league hitters. Some you will know in Mike Tozar. Others are behind the scenes doing things to help our hitters to prepare. And so, you know, some of these organizations now have major league coaching staffs of 14 to 17 people.
Oh, my.
They have full departments that are involved with, you know, prescribing plans for our players and you know, making sure that they're getting all the necessary work that that they desire. So we're encouraged with where we're going. We're positive about, you know, what the future holds with these young players. And I know that, you know, we've been through this before. I mean, we're playing the Chicago White Sox. The Chicago White Sox, one of the largest markets in all of sports, 7 straight losing seasons to get to where they are right now. You know, the Texas Rangers, one of the largest markets in all of sports, a brand new stadium, you know, 5 straight losing seasons, and, you know, I don't know where they'll end up in 2022. They spent over $300 million, and they're trying to move forward and make that next step. And so I don't like necessarily comparing us to other organizations and other teams. We got to focus on what we have to do. But I like our processes, and I feel like that you know, we're moving in the right direction. We have the right people in place. I'm really I feel great about, you know, the things that JJ Piccolo is doing, interacting with our major league coaches each and every day to making sure that those processes are consistent as players come from the minor leagues, and that we're executing the things that we need to do each and every day to prepare us for future success.
You mentioned yesterday on the pitching side that you took responsibility for rushing some of the pitching. Now, hey, we wanted to see him. I mean, there's no doubt about, like, the collective we as, like, fans. We wanted to see all these young guys come up here to the major leagues and have success and hit the ground running. How I don't know, was it reflective yesterday? I guess, how would you describe how you were kind of looking at the pitching side?
I think what we set out to do, and when you look back, I mean, it's obvious that, you know, and we knew that, you know, the pitchers that we're talking about weren't necessarily finished off to go out and compete every single day at the major league level, but we had no other development opportunity for them. And so, you know, when we set out in 2017 and 18 to start scripting out how we were going to win again, we knew that we needed to go after upper level type pitching, college pitching, pitchers that had success within their peer group at the collegiate level, because we needed them to mature much, much quicker. And then we were going to come with young position players after we got that wave into the system. And so we're trying to do everything we can to speed up the development process of those pitchers to put us in a position to win consistently. You know, when we start building our team in the mid, you know, 2000s, we took young position players, and then we supplemented it when time came with veteran type starters. Well, the landscape has changed going forward. I mean, it's harder to get those veteran type starters. It's very expensive to get those veteran type starters. So we decided to try to do it through the draft, put in the pipeline in our minor league system a group of collegiate pitchers that we felt were advanced, strong mentally, and that would do the things necessary to hopefully win major league games someday. That process is still unfolding. Now, you know, we're not going to, you know, continue to concede with the losing and say we're still rebuilding and rebuild. No, we're trying to establish a mindset where it's important to win now. And if you don't try to win now, you certainly will not. And so we can continue to create the pathway and say, well, we're still building and it's a process and it takes time. And all that is understood. Those that follow baseball and understand baseball, like you all do and many of our fans, I think they understand that. You know, you don't break into the major leagues as a top rotation guy. But Cal Eldred in our pitching processes, we're actually very pleased with the work being done, the commitment being done, the collaboration that is taking place with all of our group, and it's just going to continue to take time. Look, you have to learn to execute pitches on the nights you don't have your best stuff, and most times you don't. And let's face it, the only thing that allows you to be able to do that is experience. And experience, unfortunately, takes a little more time. But I feel good with where we are. As long as our young pitchers stay healthy, they will continue to improve and ultimately be what we desire and expect them to be.
I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, Dayton, because something that you said just kind of, you know, got my dander up a little bit with the, you know, it's expensive to go out and acquire starting pitching. And then I look at 100-day lockout and I look at us in Kansas City. I'm like, we didn't gain anything out of this lockout. Like, it becomes increasingly harder, I feel like, by the day for a market like Kansas City to compete where other teams can just go out and buy that proven talent. And then we see the lockout happen, and, like, I look at us, I go, well, we got nothing out of this deal.
Yeah, well, it can be frustrating. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, Bob, I just refuse to disadvantage us mentally as a baseball operations department, as an organization, to dwell in those areas. I mean, we've got to focus on just getting, you know, our players better. But, you know, when we signed Jason Vargas, we actually targeted Jason Vargas 2 years prior to before he became a free agent. Now, I'm not saying we tampered with him or anything like that, but we knew that in when he becomes a free agent, this is the type of pitcher that can be successful in our ballpark. This is the type of pitcher that is going to blend in well with our rotation, and he's a competitor. He commands his pitches. He'll be successful with our defense. He's tough as nails. And, you know, we were laser focused on trying to get him. We signed him early. We did the very best. We came out strong with him and got him signed. It's much harder to do that today than it was before. The supply and demand is what it is. I mean, you have to develop your own guys. And like I said, you know, unfortunately, in this game, it takes a little more time.
So, like, when you draft all these young guys in the pitching department, like you did in 18, what are the odds that one of these guys hits, two of these guys hits? Like, what's the expectation when you draft that many pitchers? How many do you truly expect to be legit major league pitchers?
Well, let me put it this way. You know, when we first, you know, began our journey in professional baseball, Paul Snyder, one of my mentors, said that it takes 20 average or better pitching prospects in your minor league system just to get 3 to 4 to the major leagues, just because of the attrition rate. You know, guys are going to underperform. You're going to have to utilize some of those players and pitchers in trades. And, you know, some are going to get hurt. And then, you know, there's going to be a few that are going to rise to the top. And that's why the volume is so important. And that's why, you know, I continue to try to educate the decision makers about the importance of not contracting minor league teams. And, you know, when we came, one of the things that I told Mr. Glass was, look, you have to allow us to add a team in the minor leagues at the short season, because it gives us a chance to sign an extra 17 or 18 pitchers a year to fill that pipeline and to grow pitchers and develop pitchers. And so now we have two less teams than we had before. And as we all know, pitchers are coming into professional baseball, collegiate baseball, with injuries, with less than pristine arms because of some of the overuse injuries that have occurred. And so it gets more and more difficult. But you need volume. You need quantity if you're going to get quality.
Dayton, is Vinny Pasquantino close to coming up? He's the name we see all the time, man, getting excited about him.
Well, Vinny's progressing well, and you know, he's right where he needs to be. I was just with Chino Cotahia last week in the minor leagues, and Chino had just left Omaha, and you know, Chino felt that, you know, he was doing very well, but still needs more time. And, you know, Vinny's going to be a big part of our future, but you know, we're going to let him, you know, continue to grow. And there's a reason that you have all the different levels, the phases of development, you know, for players. And Vinny's going to have to be finished off like everybody else. As I've mentioned before, there's never been a wider gap, in my opinion, between AAA and the major leagues. And a lot of that has to do with the level of talent, but it also has to do with some of the contraction as well. You know, AAA used to be filled with older, more veteran players, more experienced players that really knew how to play. Now it's much younger, and it seems like that you know, a lot of the power arms and some of the really good arms are right now obviously in the major leagues, and you don't get a chance to finish those guys off as much as you'd like.
Dayton Moore with us here on 610 Sports Radio. So what's next now? What are the next steps moving forward, you know, with the big league ball club to kind of get it back on track and get some wins under the belt?
Well, first of all, I trust greatly in Mike Matheny and, you know, his leadership and him setting the expectations in the clubhouse, which will carry over, you know, on the field. And, I mean, I think, you know, Bob, for us, it's just more consistency with everything that we do offensively. Certainly, the starting pitching needs to continue to get better and set the tone. And we got to stay positive, and we just got to keep getting better. We got to focus on getting better each and every day. And as I've said many times, if we do that, and we're not such you know, driven by the future, just focus on what we have to do today, we will get better. And that's what our expectations are.
Dayton, thanks for a few minutes this morning.
Okay, guys. Thanks. Have a great day.
Take care.
That's the Royals president of baseball operations, Dayton Moore, joining us here on 610 Sports Radio. Royals back in action with the White Sox today. Vern's got your pregame at noon. I guess this is just fundamentally one of my problems with baseball, Bob. It just requires so much patience
that really
I don't have.
You don't
most
have
fans
it.
Don't have.
And America doesn't have it anymore. Like, we just don't.
You know what I mean?
We're not a patient society anymore. We're just not.
No.
We're just not. Like, I'm reading some of the texts that are coming in on the text line right now.
I wanted to see the pitchers.
Yeah.
I wanted them here.
And I wanted them
kicking ass.
Right.
Okay? You want the hitting coach out? You got the hitting coach out? You want everybody hitting 300 today?
That's right.
It's not how baseball works, unfortunately.
It really isn't.
I wish it did.
It really
isn't. Because I'm in that patience level, too. Like,
baseball is like the antithesis of what our society is about right now. In our society, everything is quick, everything is fast, everything is immediate. Baseball is the complete opposite of what our society is right now. And that's the beauty of the sport, I guess, is that it's still its own thing, and it's going to continue to move along and do its own thing. But, I mean, I don't know how much patience, like, America has for the slow play of baseball, truly. I mean, we all want to be the Yankees or the Mets or the Dodgers or teams that can go out there and spend. I'm reading texts about, you know, John Sherman's got money. He needs to spend it. No, he doesn't. Not when he's getting $50 million a year for his TV deal, and the Dodgers are getting $250 million a year for their TV deal. That's not playing in the same sandbox. And that's why with the lockout thing, I was really disappointed. Nothing got better.
No, it's an interesting point you bring up because, yeah, you were hoping, like, we all went through not having baseball and they were going to make things better and whatever. I haven't seen one thing that says, well, this helps the little guy.
Or different, other than the universal DH. What am I seeing right now, you know, as a baseball fan in Kansas City that said they took care of us?
The scale's still going to be the same. The issues are still going to be the same.
Yeah.
It's just, I just expected this year to be, maybe you have to defy the odds a little bit, but I was hoping they would defy the odds a little bit.
Well, you
which
do.
Which said you can develop, but also win ball games at the same time.
Yeah.
And not have a team that they're hitting wind in the tank, even guys that used to hit that now can't hit, and then have more than one pitcher breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
If Daniel Lynch is broken through, like, you need more of those. That's the frustrating part. And then baseball makes you frustrated too, because I'm like most of you. I can't wait. I can't.
Max Scherzer's available. We don't have $250 million sitting around.
But I also don't have the patience for the development.
I know.
It's not in my.
How
it's not in my.
Because it's. But you're the norm, Josh. You are what this society in 2022 is. Right. You are the normal human being in this society. So instead of like all of society having to adjust to baseball. Baseball needs to look in the mirror and go, what do we have to do to adjust to the rest of society? Because patience isn't going to cut it anymore.
Like, I want to draft a wide receiver and have him play right away. Oh, great. I have football for that.
Right. Right. In baseball, you draft
the
guy and we'll see in 6 years if we're lucky. You know?
Yeah.
And then you draft, what do you say? You draft 20 pitchers in hopes to have three or four reach the big league level? That's not a good percentage at all.
No, that's terrible.
So it's not only is it patience, but it's also the odds are so small of players that truly do have success. I don't know how baseball changes. I really don't know, Josh, unless they just totally get rid of the minor leagues and they just make, here it is, Major League Baseball, best 25 guys you got, let's go. Mm. I mean, I don't know if that's the proper way to do it, but as America changes, as society has changed, as our cultures have changed, as everything we do has changed from even where we were 10 years ago, baseball hasn't, and I think it's time maybe baseball has to adjust to what's going on in society and what's going on with people right now.
When players go unfiltered, it's pretty great. You'll want to hear this next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.